Welcome. This is Wolf Spirit Radio. We're now broadcasting from Scotland and Whitby in Yorkshire. This is Yorkshire, isn't it?
What happened to my signature tune there?
Wasn't that your signature?
Cut me short.
No. I just faded it in at the end. Hang on. I'm just making sure this is the one I did. Oh, hang on. That's the one without... Oh, is that the intro? Yeah, this is the intro, I think.
Welcome to the Simon that's Parks the one. Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom, that you have a nickname, and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easier for us to collect. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests, and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Okay, that was take bloody two. There was the show, but you know, I just realized, you know, listening to that, this is version two. I'm going to have to make version three because we've changed the way we ask questions. Anyway, so just let me correct the incorrect information. If you want to ask Simon a question, we have a special, link in the menu. So you go to wolfspiritradio.com/listen and then it says ask question right in the menu at the top, just underneath the picture of the wolves. And, you can type it in and then it comes up into this very nicely ordered database, that I can, scroll down and scroll up and, oh my God, there's 33 pages of this. I think how many? 50 items a page. Something like that. 978 questions all since we started. So what I do is that, from the first one of the 19th, which is today, I'm going to start. And, if I've read them all by the time I get to the end of the show, I go back and then I work backwards from that point. So if you asked a question yesterday, it's possibly not likely that you asked it. This is the only way to filter it out. Otherwise, it's just a complete and utter flood. You just have to get in this window in the morning. Anyway, with all of that, and the reason I just realized, I want to say the reason I played the wrong outro, is because the little window that says, Connecting Consciousness Show Intro and Connecting Consciousness Show Outro is off the edge of the window, so I don't see either of them. I can't tell which one is which.
Nobody has a clue what you're talking about, JP.
Yeah, well, anyway, I have a playlist. I have a playlist of how to play what is playing the intros, and I can't tell the difference between the intro and the outro, basically. And I think that probably it is a kind of metaphorical summing up of how I run this radio station. But anyway. We get by. I get by. We live. Nobody dies. Well, nobody. Anyway. But so without all that, having said all that, good evening, Simon Parks. How are you this week?
Well, I'm bowled over by that introduction. That was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. When I panic, I kind of gabber in this slightly comedic way. And I made some coffee earlier and it's just, I made it far too strong and it was really bitter and it's affected my brain. So I will try to slow down and speak slowly and breathe lots. And, shall we start with the questions or do you have notifications before we get into the thing?
Yeah.
Fully. Yes.
People hopefully will remember that from last year onwards, I was very concerned about particularly Illuminati people in North America as part of Agenda 21, wishing to remove vitamins from basically the Western world. And I think initially, people who were on the periphery of awareness just thought that was just total nonsense. But those people who, you know, listened to me and other people and do their own research, they knew there was something in this. So literally, interestingly enough, about 6 weeks ago, then somebody sent me a link showing that an American department in Washington had closed down a vitamin factory in Hawaii. Remember, Hawaii is part of the United States. And then in Australia, there is a move afoot to ban vitamins entirely for sale in the country. Now, that's really quite startling. Somebody who is close to connecting consciousness and plays a very key role in connecting consciousness has close associations with vitamin manufacture. And they've told me that in the Western world, it would be very hard to legislate to ban vitamins because in the Western world, the culture in many countries is to have high street shops. So internet is easy to ban, but if you've got a high street shop, that's quite difficult. And what this person has told me is the way that these elite people are going about it is by putting pressure on the manufacturers of the tablets, on the capsules, on the liquids. So making it harder and harder for a vitamin company to actually find anybody who will manufacture those vitamins. And so that's how they're intending to do it. So I'm going to add vitamins to the list of stockpile. You know, we've talked about tinned food, bottled water, and if you have a pet, then you need to get some food for the pet in. Method to heat the food, so portable gas canisters, stoves, matches, torches. Now I'm adding vitamins to that. The idea being, I think, that once they've removed this is their plan. Once they've removed vitamins from sale, then they can really start to irradiate food over and above what they're doing at the moment. Then their plan is to get back onto the chemtrailing, because that's been reduced of late in some parts of the world, get back onto the chemtrailing and really hit people with bacteria and viruses. And if you don't have vitamins in your body and you're surviving just off tinned food, or you're surviving off food that's not got many vitamins, you will succumb. And remember the great British explorer who tried to get across Antarctica, Captain Scott, he relied entirely on tinned food. Now, yes, the weather was totally different, you know, it was totally frozen and cold. But because he wasn't getting vitamins from tinned food, they became weaker and weaker and weaker, and the whole expedition died out, whereas the Norwegians didn't rely just solely on tinned food. So you can eat tinned food, providing, on the long term, providing you have vitamins. So that's important, and I haven't yet looked at the link, but somebody has sent me a link, which is purporting to come from, again, a US government department, basically saying that vitamins can give you cancer. Vitamins are bad for you, and they are now running a campaign to try to get people off vitamins. So that's unfortunately, and it doesn't give me any pleasure at all. I predicted this, as did others from last year, saying this was ready for 2016 rollout. So it doesn't give me any pleasure to say this is exactly what's happening. All right.
I just want to add a bit, is that a few years ago, Project Camelot and all that group, there was a piece that came from the insider group, the secret programs, in that they were all taking vitamin D3.
Yes.
And very fortunately, the my brother-in-law, who I was living with, was selling vitamin D3 on his website. So I used to get always, you know, off cuts and stuff like that as well. But basically, vitamin D3, if you've got chemtrails in the air and you take vitamin D3, they will not affect you.
Yeah. So that's really important, because vitamin D3 is on the top list. I've seen the document.
To me, it's the top of my list.
It's okay. I've seen the document, JP, which actually lists the vitamins in order of which they want to ban them. And D3 is about sixth or seventh from the top.
All right. Can you remember the
No,
the,
I can't.
Any others?
D3 is a D3. Yeah. I remember it because I'm on it.
Yeah.
You know, I and others that are important to humanity are on it.
Right.
But there were, it was the 6-1 down, I remember, from the top, because they have an order. And, you know, and I, again, I think, at least a year ago, or if it wasn't on our show, JP, I did it, on a conference where, one of the Rothschild families had given $15 million to somebody to build a vitamin factory in Eastern Europe. But this vitamin factory was not for the ordinary people, using their terminology. It was purely for the Illuminati and their employees, and the idea being that once Agenda 21, which is the big agenda to basically kill off the population, once Agenda 21 had come into effect, if you were a member of the Illuminati or you were employed by them, then you would have a code number, and then you would actually be able to, through mail order, you would be able to buy these vitamins. So they have set up a number of factories around the world to supply vitamins to their own people whilst they slowly, in their plan, slowly wipe out the population. So it's really important that people get vitamins, multivitamins. If you have multivitamins, then get the D3 as a separate thing as well. And when you buy D3, generally, you can only buy them in small quantities. You know, the capsule, the plastic container or whatever only has a very few. Well, if you buy a bottle of multivitamins, you can get 50 or 100, but you won't get anything like that. So you have to buy lots of separate bottles.
Yes, well,
that's something they're trying to stop.
There's a couple of suppliers that I'd like to recommend. I have no, no financial thing about them, but, in the States, and this is where he gets from, is the VRC.com, Vitamin Research Corporation Company. I actually bought some for Colleen, She Be Bright Eyes in the chat room, she had the worst cough. And a couple of weeks ago I said, how's the cough? She said, what cough? I haven't got a cough anymore. It really does the job, when your throat, you know, people get that scratchy throat. Vitamin D3, that's the business. More than 5,000, take loads. You can't overdose on it. Anyway, enough of my little pulpit thing, but it's really, that's the one that will keep everybody happy, because if you're ill, you're not happy.
Okay, we had the Bilderberger meeting.
Talking of happiness.
A week ago or so. The Bilderberger meeting was purely and simply to ratify, perhaps is too strong a word, it was to debate the executive of the top group, and I did say that the executive were having a meeting, that's the top group of the Illuminati. They produced an executive policy or decision. The Bilderberger group, as part of their work, looked at that. I understand they've ratified China's proposal. China has agreed to allow America and some European countries access to the financial codes using a German bank, but not Deutsche Bank, because Deutsche Bank isn't perhaps what it used to be. So it means that if there's an exchange of debt and America agrees on certain things, and I don't know, what I haven't been privy to what those certain things are, but it means that America can access some of the gold, and soft landing is much more likely for America than a hard crash. But I do know that one of the prerequisites of this deal was America moving to a silver-backed currency. So what the Americans call the fiat dollar, to get away from the paper dollar and to back everything with a silver metal. So that's what's happening on that side. I've got, for people in Great Britain, Kerry Cassidy has organised a number of shows around the country, and I'm going to be speaking at High Elms Manor, which is in Watford, and it's North London. The conference is on the 9th and 10th of July, and I'm speaking on the 10th of July. So please go and support that conference. That's Saturday and Sunday, the 9th and 10th of July. Right, JP, that's it. Let's get on to the questions.
So, meanwhile, in stately stately Parks Manor, we are going to delve into From Soledad. Soledad Ahuela. Dear Simon Parks, what is your opinion on the immigrant crisis in Europe? Why exactly is it happening and with what purpose? I would really appreciate your answer. Thank you for your work. Greetings from Argentina. Soledad.
Right. As far as I'm concerned, the people are victims. All of these people are being manipulated by artificial situations, whether it's a war or whether it's crash in the economy. They're being driven out of where they would normally go, either by force or by promises of this, that and the other. And the idea, I think, is to destabilize key countries, and Germany is a key country. It's not the only country that's had a huge number of displaced people, which is a much better word than immigrant, but it has a very large number, more than a million now. More than a million displaced people have come to Germany in recent months, and that's an incredible number. And if you have lots of unemployed young men who don't necessarily speak your language, look very different from the native population, there are going to be issues and problems. And I think one of the key agendas of one faction of the world leaders is to break up a country's consistency. So if you have a, let's take Great Britain in the Second World War, the German Air Force bombed many towns and cities, and London was particularly badly bombed. But the will of the people didn't break. And one of the reasons for that was that Granny lived next to her daughter lived next to her sister. So within those three or four streets, you had extended families, and they all worked together. Everybody knew everyone. They would all go and help and assist. That isn't the case now. Nobody knows anybody who lives next to them. There isn't that feeling of compassion or consistency. So when you try to fracture or destabilize a country, one of the ways you do that is to try to strike it from within. So I am in no doubt that the mass movement of displaced peoples is to weaken the resolve of a country, to put pressure on governments, to draw on their resources, their hospitals, their schools, to put them under pressure, and to create demonstrations, riots, and lawlessness. But it is all part of a master plan to affect those countries which up until then have been quite strong. So it's a good question. I hope that explains it to you.
Yep. Same as the Roman Empire, wasn't it?
Not dissimilar, yeah.
Interesting. So, from Sarah W., I'm asking this as I want to ask about the UK-EU referendum and about the false flag event last week, which was so terrible. Do you know if we can break free of the corporate EU? Are people awake enough, and can we make sure the count is clean and not rigged? But I also want to know if there's any extraterrestrial help to get us out of the EU.
That's a really good question, and I'm not frightened to talk about it. Many people are, actually. Right. I went to what we call in Britain a boot sale, what's in America's called a yard sale today, and there's always a tent by the entrance, which is a Leave Britain campaign. So it's a big, colourful tent, and people hand out stickers and banners, perfectly legal, and try to persuade people to vote. And I have walked past this several weeks now, and I thought, you know, these guys, I'm going to have a chat with them. So I went up to one of the guys, and I got the usual pens and stickers. And he said to me, will you be voting to leave? And I said, actually, I will. I shall be voting to leave. And he said, you're fairly certain on that. And I said, yes, because I hate the one world government. And I don't particularly like big corporations. At which point, he gave me the thumbs up sign and said, I see you really know what's going on, because we can't say that to the public. We're talking about immigration, we're talking about the drain on hospitals and schools. But he said, you know, that's what people can understand. But he said, you're talking about one world government. And he said, that's actually the real worry here, that they're trying to force a one world government onto us. So I said, well, you know, that is exactly what their plan is, and that's why I will be voting to leave. Now, the second question here is incredibly important. It's, will there be a fair election? Now, you know what? I could talk about aliens left, right and centre, and no one's going to take me to court. Or you, JP. But if I was to suggest that the election would be rigged, I expect someone would be knocking on my door trying to serve me a summons. So what I'm going to say is this, and I know that our listeners and people on YouTube are not stupid and they'll understand what I'm saying. If I want to rig a campaign, what I would do is get lots of students and pay them good wage and give them lots of phone numbers and say, phone these houses and ask them what they're voting. I know this because I've had someone phone me. And they phone you and they say, will you be voting in the upcoming referendum? And you say, yes. They then say, will you tell me what you're going to vote? So you tell them what you're going to vote. All right. Now, that phone number is attached to your house. They have a software program on their computers which shows which polling station you go to. Now, if it's 60-40 split, either way, doesn't matter what it is, 60-40 split, if they wanted, and we're only suggesting this, if they wanted to rig a vote, all they would do is lose a ballot papers from that particular electoral district. Yes, they would lose 40% of their own supporters, but they would lose 60% of the opposing side. And if they do that for enough times, then they get quite a large swing. Now, if people go and look online, they'll see that in Great Britain, a number of security vans in previous elections carrying ballot papers were hijacked. Now, who in their right mind hijacks security vans that are not carrying money? So these were carrying ballot papers and the lorries just vanished. Nobody saw the ballot papers. Democracy is a parliamentary democracy. In other words, it's a democracy that means that you're allowed to go and vote. It doesn't necessarily mean that your vote will be counted. So let's get that straight. So yes, we have the right to vote, but how do we actually know that that vote is counted? So it's a really, really good question. My understanding is that if it was a very fair vote, Great Britain will vote to leave the European Union. If it's a result other than that, a large number of people in this country are going to finally understand that the word parliamentary democracy is not a true democracy. So, JP, it's a lovely question. It's very topical for Great Britain. And it is important because there is a very strong urge to make one country called Europe. In other words, all the individual countries lose their individuality and they become one country, Europe. It's a one world government. Yes, I shall be voting to leave. So thank you for the question.
That was the 1984 thing, wasn't it? Europa was the
yes,
zone?
Yes, absolutely, you know? Yes.
Yeah, he just changed
he was already. He was already there.
Yeah, yep. The blueprint. Okay, so here's more intrigues. Hi, Simon, from Ragnar Asker, from Sweden. Hi, Simon. Is the Black Knight satellite for real? Who's behind it? What's its purpose? And why did Pepsi do a commercial about it?
Right, well, it's interesting. I had somebody else send me a message on Skype, I think. So that's quite interesting, and I don't know a huge amount about it, but I know that the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO, launch a number of satellites. Many of them are just what they say on the tin. They are communication satellites. But a small percentage of them are secret satellites which are passed off as civilian satellites. I know for a fact that a number of these satellites connect with some very, very exotic technologies, and there are a number of people are on the planet who are very connected with the moon through satanic mind control elements, and some of these satellites have a role to play in that field. Interestingly enough, if memory serves me correctly, the emblem for this is a a black knight with a, like a black eagle on his chest and a sword and a shield and a helm. And it is another one of their secret programs. When a big commercial is done on something, it is to link an image, to an activity so that anybody who is mind controlled or is trigger, ready, is going to be activated. And they'll either do that through pop songs. That's why pop songs live are often different from pop songs recorded, because in the recorded version, the trigger tones or the trigger words are used, but they can't do that on the live. So that's often why a recorded version of, of an identical song is actually slightly different. So with an object like a secret satellite that has a exotic technology connection to Earth, then a large corporation could run an advert which is timed particularly around interesting phases of the planet, the moon and the stars, when that satellite is over a certain part of a continent at the same time that the advert runs. So you visually, with your eyes, and you audibly, with your ears, hear the advert, and at the same time, some electronic beam is sent down over that area. So you are visually, audibly stimulated, but then you are connected through that. So it's a good question. The person obviously knows their stuff. They've done their research. And I hope that my answer goes some way to taking you on your journey of enlightenment. So well done, you.
There's this other thing. Is the Black Knight satellite is supposed to be this 13,000-year-old weird lump of a thing that is orbiting the Earth in a really odd way that our satellites can't actually do. Have you heard about this thing?
Yes. There are a number of...
Or two of them, apparently.
Yeah. There are a number of objects that are clearly not naturally made, and they're clearly not made by anybody human on this planet. And some of them are designed to activate at set times. And it's all about, if you are into the Illuminati and you're in that particular strand of it, then it's all about prophecy. You know, you go and you learn through your organization, and you may be there 20 years, 30 years, and you learn that at certain key dates, these things are going to happen. And there are markers to recognize those key dates. And the Black Knight, in fact, I think there was three. But anyway, the objects will be at a certain position at a certain time, and then there will be rituals held around the planet, and something may or may not come from that. So it's part of the culture of people who have a great deal of magic and a great deal of lore and what we would call craft. So it's not going to wipe out the planet. Please don't let anybody start scaring us with that. But it is an important marker in 2016. And as I say, the person who has asked the question clearly has done the research. Maybe they have a family member or somebody who's worked on that sort of project, or they have come across it. But, you know, that level of knowledge to ask me that question through Connecting Consciousness, our Wolf Spirit radio show, that's pretty good. So thank you.
Okay, here we go. Actually, there's a question for, from Kuki, but, we're talking about the chemtrails and the, vitamins and things like that. So I think we've really kind of,
okay.
Let's say we've nailed the chemtrail thing for today.
Okay.
You know, because we do get recurrent questions, and I'd like to move on to sort of newer topics. I know that, you know, it's good, but anyway, right, here's a good one. From Dan Farmer. You tell us that the ones who make it out of the times ahead will be very lucky, because it will be a good time for our planet. But with the New World Order taking control and the approximate 25% of the surviving population suffering over the psychological effects of such tremendous losses of life, I don't understand how this can be a positive time. I understand that by the end of it all, Earth will have experienced a type of cleansing, but it will be encompassed by so much pain. Can you elaborate on this?
Well, the New World Order on this timeline that we have won't actually be coming out on top. That's for certain. But I've never yet met a mad dog that would die quietly. Mad dogs tend to go down fighting. So that's what, I mean, I'm being quite blunt about it now, and I've in the past been quite gentle, but we are, you know, running out of time earthwise now in terms of the decisions people have to make are, you know, just knocking on their door now. So yes, it will be difficult. And I mentioned earlier about a soft landing economically, and I've always wanted a transition that's managed. I have always advocated a managed transition from one reality to the next. But, you know, there are people who, you know, can't understand that and don't want that. And they'll either fight it or they'll just resist as however they're best to. But whatever happens, we are going to come out the other end. And whoever comes out the other end, it will be a very positive time. It's not about sacrifice, because that's not what we're talking about here. But it's about putting effort in and not just sitting in your armchair and expecting someone else to do the work for you. So it isn't free. There will be energy required. There will be decisions and some sort of payback in terms of the planet has done so much for humanity. Now it's time for the humanity to do something for the planet. So it won't be easy. It's not the end of the world. You know, I've never once advocated that we are facing the end of the world. What I advocate is that the bad guys have this plan, which, if they were to get away with it, would be pretty awful. But the timeline we're on, and we were fixed when we went through 2012, is a positive timeline, but that doesn't mean we have no pain or difficulty. So there is never going to be a moment where you wake up one morning and all the big corporations have changed what they're doing and they're running their own special charities and they're doing this, that and the other and everything's wonderful and lovely. It's not like that. We have to actually make the change. Humanity has to basically stand up and say, right, this is the vision that we have and we're basically not budging from this position. So, yep, bumpy road ahead, but a nice smooth road just over the hill.
Once we're over the lump and, do you say the lump is this is the lump year, like September's going to be the sort? I mean, it felt like September last year was a bit of a lump as well, and then it kind of eased out, well, after a few months.
Right.
Yeah, well, this is a cyclic build-up thing, isn't it?
Right. Anyone who's listened to me knows that, like I say, I've been banging on, that sounds like I'm gone mad, but I've been reiterating time and time again that for me October of this year is a very, very crucial period in time for the economic system on this planet. Now, very interesting, a guy who models through a software program you know, economic crashes and economic booms, and he's got it right for the last three times, has just come out and predicted that there's a economic crash for the end of September. Well, I'll accept that because I've been saying October. Now, if the experts who don't have access to the people or the intelligences that I have access to, but they are using very advanced software computers to look at the economy, if they're saying they think there's trouble at the end of September, I'm quite happy to accept that. Because I've always said October, whether that was the 1st of October or the 29th, I didn't know. But I was never told a date. I was never given a date. What I was told was October was one of the key points for the economy. So I'm still going to stand by that. And you're right, last September stroke October, it was China that took the hit. We know people outside of our family, if you like, have very short memories. And most of them don't realize that last September stroke October, the Sheng, Hai and Hong Kong Bank lost so much money in one day, it wiped out a whole year's profits. So in one day's trading, they lost, I think it was something like $3 billion. They just lost it. And that's why they pulled out, because had they lost another $3 billion, it would have destroyed the banking system. And for the record, Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank went to the International Monetary Fund to be bailed out. This is last October, September, October. And the IMF said, no, we haven't got enough money to bail you out. They went to the European Central Bank, who then said, no, we haven't got enough money to bail you out. They then went to the Bank of England, for goodness sake. The Bank of England said, you must be joking. They then went to the Federal Reserve of the United States of America, and the Fed said, yes, we will bail you out. Now, the very fact that the Fed said to Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, we'll bail you out, was enough to put some stability into the creaking ship so that people didn't pull all their money out. And the reason that the Fed said that was because it's the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank who is supposed to hold all of America's gold. It's not Fort Knox. That's just a total joke. It is the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank. Now, if Hong Kong Shanghai Bank went bust and the auditors went in, they'd soon find out there was no gold. And if they then said there's no gold, that would bring the collapse of America down. So that's why the Federal Reserve of America had no choice but to say to Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, yes, we'll back you. Although if their bluff had been called, I don't think they would have had enough money to bail them out. So that happened last year, and it was China that took the hit. And, you know, you look now, China's never bounced back. China's in a recession. People are very, very worried. Now, this autumn or fall, it's the West's turn, and we're going to see how that plays out. So another good question. Thank you.
Right. So, Simon, here's an interesting question, because we actually tried. We were talking about getting you to Australia by some technological means. So get this question here. So from Mimi Black. You have experienced plenty of holographic technology. And I don't remember if it was you that said this, but I remember hearing that if we've seen something on Star Wars, then it exists or has existed in our dimension. Is it possible that we could be turned into a real-life video game like the holodeck, where holograms could actually hurt us or make us believe we're experiencing something that is not actually happening?
I don't believe I've said that, but there are a number of what we would call whistleblowers, people who have worked in Intel or the military who become whistleblowers, and there's a fairly common statement out there, which is, and I'm going to try and quote it accurately, if you've seen it on Star Trek, it wasn't Star Wars, the quote was, if you've seen it on Star Trek, then you can probably assume that it's real. So that is the quote that is fairly quoted within sort of intelligence type networks. No, what I would suggest is that the world around us is a sort of a construct. Don't worry, JP, we're not going down the flat earth road. But if you imagine a world that is designed with trees and flowers, they all live, they're all real, but they're there as part of a backdrop to you because you are a human and you're very special. And so you have a place to experience, to learn and develop, or not as the case may be. You choose the way you want to be. And it is a world designed for you to interact in. And some very, very gifted psychic people sometimes see the pattern that creates this. Now, in the film The Matrix, this was an artificial intelligence, Archon-controlled system. And that's why in The Matrix films, you saw at the beginning of the film all the numbers running, the digital numbers, and we could understand that all of the world of The Matrix was created by numbers because it was artificial intelligence. But here on Earth, it's all sacred geometry. So it's not numbers that create things, it's patterns that are divine. So those few people who have the skills and the ability to see these things will get a glimpse of that. So it's not holographic as we would understand it on Star Trek, but it is a divine holograph creation for humans and other creatures to experience and to decide how they want to be. So, again, it's a really, really good question. We've had some really good questions. Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to explore the new, you know, different topics that we normally have. Okay, here we go. All right, okay, yes. Mm-hmm. From Ashley. You explained that when things first become chaotic, only those considered threatening will have to worry about being taken from their homes for the first 3 days. Once everything has blown over, what happens to the survivors who had major outstanding debt prior to the downfall? If an individual just stopped paying their bills right now, would it end up coming back to bite them after the crash?
Right, it's a good question. Yeah. But we need to be clear for the audience, because the way that the questions come across, and I know what they mean, but it isn't quite clear. What I actually said was, if you had sent an email or you had publicly led a campaign like me, for the first 3 days, somebody might come knocking on your door to take you to a FEMA camp because you were considered to be a rallying point for resistance to whatever these evil people wanted to do. After 3 days, the system would break down because there would be so much resistance and they haven't got enough boots on the ground. That's actually what I said. Now, the question here is slightly different. It's about going to the bank to pay off your credit card bill. Let's say your credit card bill is $1,000. We'll use dollars. And you pay the minimum amount. And you think, do you know what? This is all going to come down. I'm just going to pay the minimum amount until it all collapses. Well, I've got bad news for everybody. What's going to happen is there will probably be a holiday, a repayment holiday, while the system reboots and redefines itself. But there is no way that, unfortunately, people's debt is going to be wiped out under the system that is what we would call the soft landing, which has benefits but negative points. In other words, if the same control system exists, there will be a reset of the economy, but if you owe a dollar or a pound, you will still be expected to pay that, but you will be given a longer period of time to pay it. Now, running concurrently with that, we know we call the White Dragon Society or the White Dragon Organization. Now, the White Dragons talk a little bit about King Solomon's gold. And one of the many wishes of that organization, and some people call them white hats, that's a little bit of an expanded group of the Dragon Society that has intel people, etc. But they want to wipe out the system of debt completely and restart everything from afresh so that your debt is wiped out. But looking at the timelines at the moment, I can't be sure which of these models is going to come on. There's no doubt that this third dimensional planet is totally and utterly hooked on the concept of money. I know of no other planet anywhere at all that is so embedded into this, I'll give you this, but then I want this piece of paper or whatever it is, money in exchange. And because of that, I fail to understand how we can go from that to a different trading system overnight. I do believe that it can be done gradually. I actually think money is the main control mechanism for this planet. I think the people from reptilians downwards put the system of money in purely and simply to control people. So yes, it's got to go, but I can't see it going overnight because the hardship and the disaster that it would cause would be too great. So I think it will be a gentle transition, but unfortunately if you owe money to a big organization, they are going to want it back. So yeah, that's perhaps as a good warning to everybody. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, don't max out on that card. So, meanwhile, Jeff. A brush with Jeff. Simon, I'm a big fan of David Bowie, and notice he gave a lot of unusual focus to interlaced themes of aliens, Lucifer, and resurrections in his music. Was he some sort of hybrid we can expect to see in the future?
Well, first of all, he was a tremendously gifted singer and songwriter. And he was a man who was ahead of his time, but within the culture that he created, he made himself a man of that time. So in other words, the established elite really didn't like him and wanted to belittle him, but couldn't because he had such a huge fan club. And these fans were buying records. They were making record companies seriously rich. And so they weren't going to turn on the hand that fed them. But the reality was that, that Bowie was, in my opinion, a hybrid, yes. He certainly had experiences and he certainly knew the truth. That's why he took himself away from society. A very, very gifted person, as many, many hybrids are. There's certainly a place for his soul in the future. Yes, so if his soul comes back and reincarnates, it'd be very interesting to see what he would reincarnate as. But hopefully when if he chooses to come back, or if he's coming back, he'll come back into a world that will accept him at all levels. Remember that in the established world we live, if you don't dress and act as the norm, then you are considered odd. But if you are a great singer, you can somehow get away with it. You know, if he was somebody who worked for the local authority and he wanted to dress or act like that, he would never get a job. So he created a role where he could communicate with an audience, pass his message through music. The number of alien-type songs that he wrote was incredible, much more than would perhaps be considered coincidental. Great man, great shame his body's not here, but his soul will come back, and I hope if he does choose to come back, then he goes into some more creating role.
Absolutely. For some reason I seem to have you grew up in London. Bowie's a very much a product of our space, London, the '60s, the '70s, and this whole, he was always there at the grassroots of everything before things got big. Yeah. And as you say, he made things go big. So, I'm going to put some, Bowie on in the
interval. What a good idea.
Yeah. Do you have a particularly favorite Bowie song, Simon?
I do actually. Ashes to Ashes.
Ashes to Ashes. Easy. I shall, line that up and, we'll have that at the, at the end of the, I think, 1983. Wow. Was it? No, that's not. Oh, no, it's not that one. Not 1983. Even further. Scary Monsters? Yeah, Scary Monsters. That's just
If you can't find it, I got it. Have Loving the Alien.
All right. Now, I've got Ashes to Ashes here because that was 1980. Blimey. Yes, those were the days. Anyway, I was still in my teens. Long story.
Have you got any pictures of you when you did you have a great big beard then?
No, but I started going bald when I was like 16. Oh. I was one of these MPD sort of, no, not MPD, MPB, male pattern baldness, not multiple personality disorder. Well, probably that was all. Depends on how much coffee. But
I think we need a break in a minute.
Yeah, we're going to need one in a second. my brother-in-law was a hairdresser, and one day he said, "Do you want to have hair like David Bowie?" And I said to him stupidly, "Sure." The next day I walked into school, and my English teacher, who was Welsh, Mr. Roberts, he looked over at me, his face went white and said, "What has he done to his hair?" My hair was coloured flame, and I was just again a little spotty teenager. It didn't work. I mean, you see lots of kids nowadays who might look like that, but back in the 70s, it wasn't de rigueur. No, not in 1975. So, let's move swiftly on. Hang on, let's have a meanwhile. I got a new meanwhile. This is a new meanwhile. Here we go.
Meanwhile, at Stately Wayne Manor.
From Riley P. Can a being's energy or soul really be trapped in an object, or is this idea just paranormal propaganda?
It can be. It's very, very rare and very hard to do. Earth-based humans only partially have the technology. That's why, through mind control and other elements, they try to control the body or the mind. They can't control the soul. Certainly some off-planet entities have the technology and the mind capability to imprison a soul. It's incredibly rare. doesn't happen very much simply because it's one of the fundamental laws of source. You do that, and because you have intervened in somebody's free will, there can be some very serious consequences for the perpetrator. Does happen, but very rare. Good question.
I believe that that's what they did with Paul McCartney. But anyway, that's another story.
Hey, talking about the Beatles.
Diddling. The Beatles, hello.
Talking about the Beatles. Many people don't know that John Lennon, and I was just chatting to my good friend Wynne Keach today.
Oh yes, I had him on the show on Thursday.
We're going to have a jingle. Every time I mention his name, we could press a button and there could be a jingle. You'll have to find one for
Well,
that.
Look, this is a British bang. It's a British explosion. Listen to this. It's different from American ones. A very British one, don't you think?
All right, okay. Well, that can be every time I say the man's name. Although it was a bit more of a squib, that one. And we were talking about John Lennon, as we do from time to time, and I was aware that John Lennon had reported a flying alien craft outside his window, and that they had entered the room of the apartment. But on separate occasions, I've just been sent. I haven't read it. I haven't had time to read it. But there was a concurrent newspaper report that had been done that I think John had sort of given some sort of interview to. Basically describing an alien that he'd seen, and lo and behold, it was a mantid, or an American mantis. Now, that I didn't know, and that was incredibly important for me to find that out, that John Lennon had potentially had contact with mantid or mantis beings. And then, of course, listeners will immediately remember my story of babysitting for John Lennon's father, Freddie Lennon, and his second wife, Pamela Lennon, babysitting their children. So it's interesting that there's a mantis link there.
There's
so
another
I just
nugget.
To throw that one in, JP.
Simon, there's another nugget.
Go on.
All right, get this. All right, in a separate story, and I think I might have posted it to you, or I was intending to post it to you.
Yeah.
To further go into that story about John Lennon and the mantids.
Yeah.
He was given an egg. Shaped thing, mm-hmm. An object.
Yeah.
And Lennon gave that object to somebody, and I read an interview with that somebody. And I can't remember who exactly that was. What would the significance of an egg-shaped object from a mantid be?
Right. Now then, I didn't know that it was a mantid that gave John the egg. I did know that John had an egg-shaped object. Let's just call it that, okay? I didn't know that it had come from a mantis or a mantid. And again, those who are following this carefully will know that I have promoted, not for monetary gain, but I promoted a film called Ender's Game. Ender's Game. And at the very end of Ender's Game, the hero of our story carries an egg. The very end of the film. So those of you who have not seen Ender's Game, you need to watch it. And at the very end, he does take an egg.
Okay, get this, Simon.
There you go.
Get this. That someone is Uri Geller.
Right, now that's incredibly interesting again. We're actually, I know we're making history on air, but
we're joining some dots together.
We are doing some detective work.
Here we go. There's the, you can scroll down, you can
just
see
send me
him
a picture,
with the egg.
Yeah, I'll just have a quick look at it.
And I'll just describe it. It's a very small, I'd say it was about the size of a quail's egg. It's just maybe about the size of his
Some
eye.
People may not know what a quail
well,
is.
Well, a quail,
oh, there it is.
Yeah, okay, so it's yeah. about maybe, an inch, 2.5 centimeters long, 3 centimeters long.
All right, I'm going to read that
go ahead.
After the show. Right. Now, Uri Geller was an asset of Mossad. So he was a Mossad agent. That much I know for certain. What I didn't know was that he was also working for the CIA separately and that he was playing one off against the other. And interestingly enough, and this cannot be coincidence because I don't believe in coincidence, Yesterday, I was given a book, the book that Uri Geller had written. So I've actually got a Uri Geller book to read. So this is all falling nicely into place.
Okay, here we go. This is Lennon's account. I won't do the accent. About 6 months ago, I was asleep in my bed with Yoko at home in the Dakota building. And suddenly I wasn't asleep, because there was this blazing light round the door. It was shining through the cracks in the keyhole like someone was out there with searchlights or the apartment was on fire. That's what I thought. Intruders or fire. I leapt out of bed, and Yoko wasn't awake at all. She was lying there like a stone. And I pulled open the door. There were these four people out there. Fans, asked the interviewer. Well, they didn't want my freaking autograph. They were like little bug-like. Big bug eyes and little bug mouths, and they were scuttling at me like roaches. He broke off and stared at me. I've told this to two other people, right? One was Yoko, and she did believe me. She says she doesn't understand it, but she knows I wouldn't lie to her. I told one other person, and she didn't believe me. She laughed it off and then said I must have been high. Well, I've been high, I mean, right out a lot of times, but I never saw anything on acid that was as weird as those freaking bugs, man. I was straight that night, Lennon swore again. How do you know they did anything to me, man? Because they must have come for a reason. You're right, they did something. But I don't know what it was. I tried to throw them out, but when I took a step towards them, they kind of pushed me back. I mean, they didn't touch me. It's like they just willed me, pushed me back with willpower and telepathy. And then what? Said the interviewer. I don't know. Something happened. Don't ask me what. Either I've forgotten, blocked out, or they won't let me remember. But after a while, they weren't there, and I was just lying on this bed, next to Yoko. Only I was on the covers. And she woke up and looked at me and asked what was wrong. I couldn't tell her at first, but I had this thing in my hands. They gave it to me. What was it? I've been carrying it around ever since, wanting to ask somebody the same question. You have it. Maybe you know. I took the metal egg-like object and turned it over in the dim light. It seemed solid and smooth. I've never seen anything like it. Keep it. It's too weird for me. If it's my ticket to another planet, I don't want to go there. Anyhow, I won't go on. You've seen the egg.
Yeah.
You've heard the account.
I'm not going to say anything at the moment until I've thought about it very carefully.
Good. Let's move on, shall we? Very interesting.
It's tea time.
Indeed. Time to get your tea. Oh, yes, indeed. So it's time for David Bowie's Ashes to Ashes.
Lovely.
David Bowie there. Ashes to Ashes. So there we go. Simon Parks, the Connecting Consciousness Show. Connecting dots, connecting consciousnesses. How are you doing? So there we go. That was quite fun, wasn't it? Quite an interesting first segment.
Good.
Let's move on. Now, back to the Anunnaki. From Melissa, from CC New Zealand. What are the links between the Anunnaki and Draconis Reptilian, if any? I know that Anu is the king of the reptilians, but according to Sitchin, Anu is the king of the Anunnaki. Is this the same entity?
Right. The original alien groupings that had quite a say over the creation of the development of humanity was a group of reptilians were from the Orion Empire and from Sirius. And one is predominantly masculine and one is predominantly feminine. And these two groups often provided royal lines that could lead great empires. It's quite confusing because when we talk about Draconis, we're talking about white-skinned reptilians. Now, most reptilians that we're familiar with are green or greeny-brown. There are red ones, and there are sort of bluish-coloured ones that I'm aware of, and there are probably others that I've never seen. But the Anunnaki were fashioned to connect with the Draconis, because by this time of Earth's development, and we're probably looking at about 20,000 years, so before the Great Flood, before the Ice Age melted, the object being that, and this is where we get racism from today, that white was a good colour, and any other colour from that wasn't good. So Anunnaki are, or were, predominantly very pale-skinned. and a lot of elite bloodlined people with hybrid bodies have very, very pale skinned faces. They really do. And the Anunnaki almost look like they put chalk on their face. That's the way to describe it. Anunnaki also have very long faces. They don't have the typical Palladian face, which is a very round, chubby sort of face. So we have two major groups, the Orion Empire and those from Sirius, who were creating royal lines. We have the Draconis line coming from that and forming a separate grouping on the planet Earth called the Anunnaki, which is a mixture of human and reptilian. And I've always tried to be as clear as possible that when humanity began to expand and grow, the boots on the ground weren't enough to control them. And so it was decided that each city-state had to have a ruler, and that ruler had to be human enough to be able to converse and pass laws and not be stoned in the street, but alien enough never to forget, you know, who they answered to. So the Anunnaki were created, and these were beings that passed for human but weren't. Now, there's a character in a science fiction book. I can't remember the author. You might help me out here. The book, the guy was called Elric. Is it Elric or Eric? Eric of... Oh, he was a swordsman, and I can't remember the rest, but this, this Eric was the guy who was this magical fella who had a sword, and the sword, when you stuck the sword into somebody, it drank their soul. And it was Eric of Melninbone. That was the place he'd come from. Now, one of our many audiences are going to be able to help me out with who wrote that, but Eric was described exactly as Anunnaki, very thin, slim, with a chalk white face. And that is really the group of people. Stitchin is correct. I don't have a problem with Stitchin. So many people seem to have a problem with Stitchin, and I'm very, very tempted, if I ever had a Sumerian scroll, to say to them, okay, you think Stitchin's wrong. You decipher that scroll and you tell me what you think. And of course they just look at me blankly, and I say, well, how on goodness knows name can you tell me Stitchin's got it wrong when you can't even read these? Stitchin was one of just a handful of people on the planet who could actively read it. Now, yes, people's interpretation, you know, are different, but we have to go with the best we've got. Stitchin was one of the best on the planet at the time. So I've got most of Stitchin's books, and to my knowledge and my memory, it's by and large accurate. So that's another good question.
Okay, so please tell us all you know about the Pleiadian races specifically. How many groups are there, and which planets do they come from? How different they are from each other, and are those incarnating on Earth more likely to come from a specific group of those different Pleiadians? Love, Melissa.
Right, it's a good question, because the Pleiadian group, the true Pleiadian group, are a force for good. You know, they are a positive force for good. Unfortunately, there is a breakaway or faction group of Pleiadians. And we had a conference call, I think, with Alex Collier and I think it was Jim. And we were talking about this, and Jim, is it Jim? Oh, somebody asked me questions about Pleiadians anyway. I don't really remember names very well, I'm afraid. And I was trying to explain that the aliens that George Adamansky saw were a faction of the Pleiadian group. And this is a negative group. And they actually were being filmed by the CIA. The CIA actually bought properties opposite where George Adamansky was living and stuck cameras through the windows and just filmed 24/7 because there were so many spacecraft over his house. These spacecraft were incredibly primitive. They literally look like tin cans, and there's some footage of it on YouTube, and it looks so contrived that many people don't accept it as real, and they say it's trick photography. But bear in mind, these films predate digital or blue screen work. These films were made with an 8mm old cine film before all the manipulation. The craft I've seen on these films look absolutely genuine to me. They are breakaway faction of Palladian, which was a created a faction which we called Aldebaran, which was the group that worked with Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich and with the SS, with the Thrall Society and the Vril Society through channeling. And they are a negative form. And here's the clincher. When these very, very gifted people from these societies were doing automatic writing, lo and behold, it was Sumerian. The writing was absolutely akin to Sumerian, so we have the Anunnaki link coming through. So this is a faction of Palladians who are, and they're still going, who have turned against their own designs and want to go for themselves. And that's really sad because that's fifth dimensional. So it's not often that evil can break into the higher dimensions. It's very, very rare, but it has on that occasion. True Palladian group, very, very determined to get involved in decision-making on the Earth. Absolutely, their main enemy is not the reptilians. It is artificial intelligence. It is AI. It is the reptilians in the sense that the reptilians unwittingly transported AI around the planet and unwittingly enabled AI to infect all of the human-type connected electronics. So the reptilians were... It's like a cat carrying fleas. So the reptilians were the cat and they carried the fleas of the artificial intelligence. So... Palladians are part of a group of galactic council. There's more than one council. The Palladians are the go-to guys. That's very American, isn't it? They're the go-to guys if you have a situation on Earth. You want an underground base taking out. But the Palladians will use sixth dimensional weaponry. So Palladians are fifth dimensional, but they will use sixth dimensional weaponry because reptilians and AI are operating in the fourth dimension. And if you can use a sixth dimensional weaponry, then there's no way that the fourth dimension can model that. If it's fifth dimensional, they'll have come across it. So, yeah, that's, I hope that helps. So, where they come from, mm-hmm. If you go onto the internet and you do some research for the Pleiades, you will find some very interesting pictures. And if you are a Palladian soul in your body, have a look at those pictures, those planets, and see which ones speak to you, because you will have a connection if you're Palladian.
So this is it's part of my research as well, okay. as you're aware. Yeah. Those pesky Aldebarans.
Yeah.
And from what I can understand, the reptilians brought in the AI, right? They got AI infected a long time ago. But I believe that the AI are infected humanoids. The Aldebarans are AI infected humans, and that's what gives the Nazis their characteristic heartless flavour.
Right. What happened was that long before Arnold Schwarzenegger played the Terminator films, and there is actually a drawing on the internet. It's a very old drawing. I think it's literally done in the 50s or 60s. And it actually shows a person with some sort of thing on the side of their face. When we talk about implants, we always talk about tiny little things. But they had grafted pieces of what looked like very primitive technology to the side of their face. And an Aldebaran neither looks male nor female. So they have very feminine features, but they can also be masculine. They have very big eyes. And they can have pieces of what were, at the time, very primitive technology actually enmeshed into their body. So when AI infects somebody, it generally does it through hardware technology. What you're talking about, JP, is about a mind-controlled system, a way of life based on AI, no emotion, or adding to it the reptilian pride and culture. So if you take a reptilian way of life, the royal reptilian way of life, and then you remove all emotion, then you have quite an interesting creature, which may or may not have a soul. So, yes, I totally agree with what you're saying, but in the early days, the days that I'm familiar with, the Aldebaran group had metal computers enmeshed into their physical body. And that's, of course, what they're trying to do now. It's the transhuman agenda. Oh, you know, if we give you an artificial arm, you'll be 5 times stronger. Oh, we'll give you some legs that are artificial. By the way, you don't need that human brain, do you? We'll give you this. And before you know it, you are no longer human. You are a machine. And that is exactly what they were trying to do. So it's good research, and it's worth following, JP.
I'm brought back, and I realised that we were sold it a long time ago. Do you remember the $6 million man?
Oh, God, yes.
And, you know, as you say, you know, an artificial arm that is stronger than a regular arm, you know, a bionic, and they called it bionic. It was a rebranding.
Man.
Yeah, the Bionic Man. Remember that? And then they took the whole scripts and they just wrote she instead of he, and they brought Lindsay Wagner in, and she became the Bionic Woman. And it was exactly the same series, but with a woman playing the man.
Well, it's important. It's really important, because people who perhaps are listening to this for the first time will just think we're reminiscing. We're not. Because how you infect humans' consciousness is by producing television shows and showing that it's an advantage and it's good. And if you aim at an audience between the ages of 12 and 20, in 20 years' time, those are the people who are in positions of responsibility, they're voting, they're doing this, that and the other. So often what mass media will do is try to sow seeds for the future. And we obviously know about the Mickey Mouse Club. But the idea of the Bionic Man, it was Steve something or other, I seem to remember.
Steve Austin, a man barely alive.
Exactly.
We have the power to these things are burned into our consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
We can rebuild, we can say, you know, we can rebuild him. Everybody says it now, but that's where it came from. We can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Yes, and what they're trying to do is to say that's fine. And when we watch the very latest film, Tomorrowland, and some people got the wrong end of the stick, because I was criticizing the film and they were saying, no, you know, you got it wrong, Simon. You know, artificial intelligence is good. No, it's not. In the way what they were showing at the end of the film Tomorrowland was that all of these cloned artificial robots were going back through a portal to go and do work, you know, and the reality is, no, it should be people that do that. Should be people that change history. It should be people who take responsibility for their own history and the history of their planet, not give it to an artificial person. So I'm afraid what happens is that Hollywood, in general, most directors toe the line and they produce articles or films which are meant to take hold 20, 30, 40 years later. And that was one of them. In actual fact, it's very interesting because I think the Bionic Man used a film where a real footage of a small, which was called either the Mosquito or something, it was a small craft attached to a big bomber. And he sort of flew it and he had an accident. So it was trying to link it with American culture. This is what they were trying to do. And it doesn't change to this day. That's what they're after. And then you get these really brave and good directors who try and slip in some warnings and the truth. And they have to do it in such a way that they can still get money from the system and create more films, but they chip away. So not everyone, not every film coming out of Hollywood is negative, but we have to be very discerning. So yes, a blast from the past.
Yeah. So, really, yeah, as you said, we're not just reminiscing. I'm pulling out these bits of programming, literally programming, and what's known as predictive programming. So, which is basically they put it in there so that later on I'll be comfortable with the idea of being implanted. Oh, look how useful it was when that man had his arm cut off.
When was that show?
Now, that must have been in the 1970s. It would be at least 75, 76, because I think I was about 15, 16.
Right.
You're, you're a little bit older than me, aren't you? So you'd be 17, 18.
So if it was 75, how old is that then? Because I don't understand maths on this planet.
75, 25 plus
40 years ago.
Yeah, 41 years ago.
Can you remember 40 years ago? You know, my memories can be phenomenal at times. Can you remember how the show started?
Let me just try my memory machine.
No, you're not allowed to cheat and go and find a video.
When the show started, that's my memory machine. This is like my time.
I love your jingles. Can you remember when he's in that little mosquito-y type aeroplane and that we hear the commentary between him and the pilot of the aircraft? Can you remember how it goes?
Oh, I can't hold it anymore. She's breaking up.
No. This is 40 years ago, right? And I haven't seen this since about 1975. And he says something along the lines of BBRM switches are on, landing Proctor. BBRM arm switches are on, landing Proctor switches are go, forward with the side stick.
Wow. No, I don't remember that bit.
Now listen, I hope that the audience now will go and find that and see if actually I'm right. Because I have a phenomenal memory for nonsense.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you anything useful, but, it was clearly, designed to play its part and to say to people, look, you know, it's quite natural and it's a positive thing. Because somebody a long time ago sat down and wrote the future for humanity that they wanted, and they created these, and they said, when the time is right, we will release this, but it will take effect many years later. Now, the good thing is that many people are waking up, and lots of people don't want what they're offering. So it was a nice try, guys, but I think they're going to have to go somewhere else and sell their products.
So, Simon, remember the last show? Hang on. Let's just go back to the last show. Meanwhile, with the last show, you said something really juicy, and we were like, and you said, regarding the pyramid, and you calling them a device, what is their purpose? Are they active? Are they active, and what influence does this have on the evolution of Gaia and humanity in the multiverse? Has Anu indeed left the planet, and if yes, how does this affect you, Simon?
Right, but it's interesting because I can't now turn around and say I can't remember last week because
I've just got a great memory. Yeah.
Right. Okay. The pyramid was not built at the same time as the Sphinx. The Sphinx is actually older. You know, I couldn't sit in a room with Egyptologists. They would all get up and walk out. So we're looking at a period, for the building of the pyramid, between 15,000 years ago and 20,000 years ago. That is on the information I have. That's not anything I've read on the internet or any books. That is what I've been told. Somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 years ago, the pyramid was built, but the Sphinx was already there. Right. Okay. The pyramid was never a place to bury a pharaoh. In actual fact, I think I'm correct in saying that they haven't found a single pharaoh's body in a pyramid. And the answer is, from the Egyptologists, oh, they've all been grave robbed. We've been sold the concept of a pyramid, but actually, if you have the time to investigate it, you'll find that a pyramid is just part of a pyramid complex. And the funerary buildings are actually around the pyramid, but they've all been, you know, just smashed to their foundations. But nevertheless, that is where the pharaoh was placed. And just because in the Great Pyramid in the King's Tomb, supposedly, there is a black obsidian granite coffin-like thing, doesn't actually mean that the person lay in there. If we understand that the rooms have a tremendous resonance, so if you had some singers with perfect pitch and you set up a chant, as you could do in many medieval, who understand sacred geometry, medieval buildings, you get a very interesting build of a frequency. If we think of the grand staircase, and imagine that in the notches that are in the grand staircase, we could place crystals, and if what Egyptologists suggest are tombs that connect down. We could place some fluids. And if we think about what the Egyptologists call air shafts, which actually point towards Cyrus, they're not air shafts at all, if they allow frequency modulation, I am absolutely convinced that the pyramid was a massive powerhouse, and it did many things. If you are supremely, I don't like the word intelligent, if you are supremely advanced and you have the option or the opportunity to build something, you don't just try and just cover one aspect. You try and cover as many aspects as you can. The pyramid is placed on a very important degree of the earth. All the planets wobble, and the pyramid, as part of its function, stabilized the planet. Now, the question asked about Gaia, and you're absolutely right, because part of the function of the pyramid was to balance the planet, because it wobbled and it'd been hit by an explosion a very long time ago, which Wynne Keach has, I think, spoken about. And it did actually affect the planet and put the wobble in. So the pyramid, part of the pyramid's role on that very, very special, I can't remember, is it 33 and a third? I can't remember what the degree line is, or 29.5. But it actually helps to hold the planet in the wobble. The pyramid was also a beacon to bring in spacecraft from a very wide range. It was also a weapon. What the Egyptians call the Benben stone, that's the top part of the pyramid that's been removed, that was actually crystalline and could fire a sound wave or a sonic beam, which could be used like a lighthouse to ride the beam in, or it could be turned up and used as a weapon. Now, when the creature I call Dad and his two bloodline, well, one was a half son, one was a full son, hence all the infighting that families had. When one of them took himself off and hid in the pyramid and made a fortress out of it, and there was a sort of a standoff, like about the police sort of try and talk the person out. It was more of a standoff. That person was talked out and still given positions of responsibility, but the place was decommissioned, which meant taking the crystals out. The black, it's not obsidian, it's a black volcanic rock. Basalt, I think. The black box that has a chip inside of it was a place where the power transformer, for want of a better word, was placed. So the pyramid is indeed a very, very ancient piece of kit, but it is primitive. It is a very primitive build. I don't mean the conception of it, because the pyramid is a wonderful shape and, you know, you have the pyramid on your picture, JP. But the materials used were very primitive, because the people at the time, the off-planet people here, only had access to Earth's materials and whatever they could cannibalize out of their spacecraft. That is the big problem that many people don't understand. You know, why is this built of brick? Why isn't it something else? And why is it so primitive and roughly hewn? Because you have a small group of aliens utilizing many thousands of workers. Yes, they have machines, but ultimately they're having to use the materials on the planet and what they can raid out of their own spacecraft. You have a mix and match. You have the knowledge and the concept of what you can achieve, but you are limited by the raw materials and the processing and the smelting and the building, because that planet is so technologically backward. I mean, ultimately, we're talking 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, the Bronze Age. So it's a really, we could do a whole show on the pyramids, and I know the audience would really love that. So it's a great question. So thank you.
Oh yeah,
very much.
Absolutely. And of course, one of my favourite subjects as well. You know, I've been you know, building and collecting pyramids. It's actually a tetrahedron, to be honest. Just to be precise, it's a copper tetrahedron that I made.
That,
you know, someday
I just can't see it because your beard's covering it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because but it does. You know, you can be forgiven for thinking it's a pyramid because it has.
I will always call it a pyramid.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Because a tetrahedron is a really bad word, isn't it? Especially for dyslexics.
Yes.
It's like a pyramid.
Exactly.
So great. So here's my thing: the Warden Cliff Tower. I've been doing a bit of research into Tesla,
okay.
And one of the reasons that he built the Warden Cliff Tower is to get that thing, that great big spherical thing, up there. Right now, in the old days, if you want to get a big thing up there, well, the only thing you could do is pile a bunch of bricks up. This Ben Ben stone was working like a Tesla coil.
Yes, yes.
And it's to, because up where it is, there's a layer of, ions, that is more abundant than they are on the ground. And that creates a potential difference. And that's what, you know, that's its like primary charge. And then this device in there, what you didn't say was that it's the same size as the description of the Ark of the Covenant, which I believe is a crystal capacitor plasma generator, which generates a plasma field, which the King's Chamber is actually it's brilliantly lit. It's hugely brilliantly lit, and this thing generates gravity, which is why it needed a great big stone on top of it to hold it down. And that's why there's all these stacks of granite above the King's Chamber, is to hold this thing down, not to, you know, they, you know, why? Yeah. And it also generated these enormous vibes, and as you say, they harness it in different
ways. This is the connection between the Israelites and Egypt.
Yes.
This is the interesting part, because the technology was taken from Egypt and given to the Israelites, and one of the reasons that Pharaoh came charging after the Jews was because they took something that he wanted, and that's not appreciated. It wasn't that he was filled with anger because he was just glad to get rid of the Jews, but the point was the Jews took something that had given him great power and control, and that's why we know that many people who don't declare in the Bible to be pharaohs or the children of pharaohs actually were in the royal family or the royal line. So there is a strong connection between Egypt and Israel.
And the thing that he took was one of the crystal power units that, you know, without... were there more than one of these crystals?
Yes.
And he had like one half of the thing.
Yeah, there were more. There was more than one. There had to be,
and
because of the way the balance needed to be.
And the singing, the chanting, was what empowered the crystals by making them vibrate, generate electricity using the piezoelectric effects.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and then there's the other part. Is right. Every pyramid, if you take put your fruit in the pyramid, and it would be, it didn't go off because it would dehydrate. Mm. Ah, there's the cat. There she is.
No, exactly. and that's the whole thing about, taking out everything from the pharaoh. So you basically desiccated the pharaoh. You took it all out.
That's right. So
the link was there.
Here's the thing, Simon. The desiccating effect did something. Where does the water go? I believe that the water is turned into plasma and transmitted through the top of the pyramid.
Because you are exactly right. And there are only a handful of people on the planet who know what you're about to tell me and the audience. And that is why in the religion of the pharaohs, they returned to their family in the stars through the what the stupid Egyptologists call the ventilation shafts, but in actual fact their essence was shot out at great speed towards the pointing, which was the stars of Sirius or Orion. So you are only one of a few people on the planet. And I'm not bullshitting you, JP. There are very few people who know what you've just said publicly.
Yeah. Well, I'm just piecing it all together because people tell me things. And there was one person who told me, oh, I remember being in Egypt, being in the pyramid. Then suddenly I wasn't in the pyramid. I was looking down on the pyramid and I was looking up at Orion and then I was looking down at the pyramid and he was going, ah, so that's what. And he was shot out. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, correct.
So your water is turned to plasma. It's generated. It's then electrically sent to the destination where it's reconstituted as water into another body, which is desiccated. Or can you walk around as a bag of water?
That my knowledge ends at the point that they are fired out from the pyramid.
All right. Okay.
That isn't taught. That isn't taught.
Well, there we go. So, let's move on to other people's questions, because this, you and I could talk about this for a long time.
Well, no, this is just as good.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what people listen. They want new creational stuff here, and they get it because we have a flexibility on our show to be able to just to go anywhere.
That's right. Okay, so still out in space from Gijo or Hijo, Matthew. Hello, Simon and JP. This is about Ashtar Command. Are they good or bad? Or is there more than one group called Ashtar Command? Thank you both for all the hard work you're putting in. God bless you both.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. God bless you too. There is a God, but he doesn't sit in a throne. Right. I've always steered clear of criticizing or attacking or being negative about any other person or group generally, because if I do that, then they can do it to me, and we're all supposed to be working for the good. What I have said publicly is that any individual or organization that doesn't show itself, I have a problem with, simply because if you are going to give information, then you should be prepared to say, this is who I am, so that people can research you. If you're asking people to believe you, and I do these radio shows, and I do my conferences, not because it's a fun thing to do, because I want people to believe me. And if they believe me, then I'm hoping they'll go and start their own independent research, and it will enlighten them, and then they will then enlighten others, and we have a domino effect of education. But one of the important things for me was not to hide behind a curtain, not to put a mask on my face, but to actually say, this is who I am. And so you can really look at me over many hours of video and decide whether I'm real or not. So that's the first part. The second part is any organization, whoever it might be, that says, basically, the world is finished. I'm really sorry. But do you know what? Our space brothers... Do you remember that was a term we used to have thrown at us 4, 5, 6 years ago, space brothers? The space brothers are going to arrive and we're going to take us all on board their spaceships and take us to the new Earth. No, what they're going to do is get you all on the spaceships and then eat you. I'll just say that again. They're going to take you on the spaceships and eat you and carve up your bodies and sell the DNA. DNA is the currency in the universe, and your organs is a bit like animal mutilations. They always wanted the glands from animals, and they'll want that from humans. So no, any organization that does that. So if somebody or an organization is faceless and you know, gives you information, have a look at that and say, is the information they're giving positive for humanity, or is it negative for humanity? Not oh, is the intel good? That's a sideshow. What actually do they say about humanity? Are they talking about free will, about empowering humanity, or are they saying, look, it's all finished, it's all over with, you've got to do this, you've got to do that? So I've always said to people, you know, trust yourself, trust your soul, and make your decisions. I haven't really had a cup of tea, very English. I haven't had a cup of tea with anyone from Ashtar Command, and maybe one day I will, but, you know, they're not really high on my list as tea-drinking companions. So that's my answer.
I have a little addendum to this. being a sound engineer, I mess around with sound. And, you know, obviously a few years ago I came across the famous, this guy's sound comes on the TV, the Ashtar Command, da 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 da. And, so what I did is I took that tape and I thought, if I was, when was it, 1977 or something like that, if I was in 1977, what technology would be available to me as a, for instance, student, at the media studies department of my local Ipswich University, let's say.
Okay.
And, I've had an Akai 4000 DS at my disposal, probably, because that was the de rigueur tape recorder that you'd have in all AV departments. It, I don't know if you remember, at school, you would have had this, it was a great big, a beautiful thing, wooden, open reel thing with these great big levers that you, twist like taps, flat levers. Anyway.
No, I had an abacus.
You had an abacus. Anyway, it was something that I would play with when I was in my teens. And what you could do with it, you could vary the speed. And so you could record something at one speed and then play it back at another.
Okay.
So, yeah. For instance, I could record, hello, good evening and welcome, and then it would come out like this.
Hello, good evening, and welcome.
You see, I'm using modern technology. I've got another device that does this. Anyhow, without taking a too long story about this, I did my own version of it. I imitated the thing using what I simulated to be the technology of the time. You know, what I could do on my Akai 4000. And I created something that was almost exactly the same as what was broadcast. And then what I then took was the original broadcast and pitch shifted it so that you could hear the voice as if it was normal and not slowed down. And it just sounded like some nerdy student's voice. Very bland sort of, home counties kind of voice. Not a posh voice, but just kind of... like a lecturer's voice almost, just reading this thing out. It was just rubbish. So, right.
let me
everybody was taken in by it.
Right. Let me just, help our listeners out here, JP. What actually happened? I think it was it 75?
Around that, 75, around 77, that, something around.
What actually happened is what we would call in Great Britain the Southern TV channel. Now, I lived in the south of England, so we used to get Southern TV, and it was actually, its logo was a rising star within a circle. And suddenly, a number of television masts or transmitting stations around the south area started to transmit. I don't know how many minutes it was, but they transmitted. It just came right across whatever television station you were watching. This just came straight on, and you couldn't, you know, other than turn the TV off, you couldn't get rid of it. And there was a message here. And I'm absolutely no doubt that this was artificial intelligence utilizing people to carry out their work. And what you're doing basically, JP, is saying, you know, look, they used the technology that they had at the time, and you've been able to demonstrate that the technology at the time would have produced something very similar to what we heard. What I'm adding to that is that the people who did that were under the control of something much greater, because you need the elites backing to turn off or to allow you to have enough power to come across broadcasting television signals. So that was the key. And I remember it at the time. So well done, JP. That's really good. But yes, I totally agree.
Here's a little burst, just a few seconds, of the voice. If you speed it up to making it sound like a normal voice. So here you go.
The time for conflict is now past, and the race of which you are the part may proceed to the higher stages of its evolution if you show yourselves worthy to do this.
So, if you show yourselves, I mean, it's a really nerdy voice. So anyway, long story.
But it's really important because somebody in a very, very senior position made it possible for transmitting stations, transmitting television stations to be broken and to beam that across. So somebody in a university, it will have been college or university, under instructions did that. And we know that the multinationals, we know that the military industrial complex use universities for lots of their testing, produced that, and it was then beamed out. And it was part and parcel of the plan, and this was years ago. So yeah, another good point to show that right back in the mid-70s, they were already planning. You know, you see demonstrations in London, quite legitimate demonstrations, and everybody then starts putting these masks on their face. Well, you know, why would we hide behind a mask? You know, I've never hidden behind a mask. And, you know, I have a problem with people that don't show themselves. So, yeah, that's great.
So, from Pseudo Cerberus, who's a regular questioner here. So, if you got your tea, have a sip here. But this is an interesting question. It is my understanding that autistic spectrum disorder is at the root of other egocentric disorders like psychopathy, schizophrenia, and narcissism. I myself has been diagnosed with all four, although I developed schizophrenia as a secondary illness due to stress at entering high school. Many people who have these disorders enjoy collecting, as it gives them a sense of control and allows them to project their own selves onto such collected inanimate objects. It would seem that this ritualized behavior sustains the collector's sense of power. It is a territorial activity that allows the collector to share meaning, order, and intimacy between their self and their environment. I consider this behavior distinctly reptilian, and if I'm wondering if you agree and could elaborate.
Excellent question. Does the questioner know that I collect fossils? I think they might do.
Well, you know, dragons collect stuff, don't they?
Well, you do. I mean, I suppose it's a sign that how open I am with people, because I could go, oh no, oh, I'm a collector, oh no, how shall I answer this question? And the way I'm going to answer it is honestly, openly, and truthfully. It is a very reptilian trait. You're absolutely spot on. It really is. Is it about power and control? No, it's more about order. You understand the reptilian culture, it's about order. You stand here, you stand there. It's like the army, isn't it? And you go there. However, in my case, it's not quite like that. When you come here to this planet, you are impressed with it. You don't mean I'm impressed with the damn machine in the car park.
I'm impressed with the service, no.
that takes the money and then gives you a ticket.
You are impressed like you're being stamped.
Yeah, you know, I'm not impressed with that. But what I am impressed with is the diversity of life and the wonder of source to create things. So many alien-type beings on this planet collect because they are archiving. They are wishing to have a bank, a bit like a Noah's Ark. They are wishing to celebrate the fact that the Earth can produce that. And I don't mean that one should go and get a butterfly and put a pin through it, for God's sake. I'm not saying that at all. But if you were a coin collector and a stamp collector, then that could be considered quite a reptilian trait. So we've answered that one. There's a secondary question here. I'm on record of saying that, of course, people can have a mental issue, which a doctor might call schizophrenia or what have you, because I'm not a doctor. But there are, in my opinion, elements that can occur to a person which a doctor would diagnose as schizophrenia, but I would look at differently and say, I think that what I'm looking at maybe is a multiple personality disorder caused by trauma. And the questioner did say about stress. The question for me is, was that trauma done for trauma's sake, or was that done to imprint a coding on top of it? I call it phase A and phase B. There's a wonderful film called The Imitation Game, where Cumberbatch, ex-Sherlock Holmes guy, plays Alan Turing, who did such great work to crack the Enigma machine. And there's one element there where he's having his dinner as a schoolboy, or his lunch. I don't think it's the evening meal. He's having his lunch and he mustn't let the carrots touch the peas, and he's putting all the peas in one part of the plate and the carrots in the other. Many people who have schizophrenia or whatever are geniuses. The guy who played Sherlock Holmes, Jeremy Brett, a most wonderful actor, he suffered from that. But this, on one hand, is painful and difficult, but on the other, means people are tremendously creative and capable. So I have always looked on it, not as something that's bad, but as something that has to be worked with and maintained, contained, and how can we be creational from it. So, you know, I'm not qualified to know what drugs. I know both Jeremy Brett and I can't remember the singer now, and that's one of the names that I'm not good with people's names. I'm really not. Elvis Presley. They were both on lithium. And in medical circles, it's actually called the fat drug. And the reason that Elvis Presley became fat wasn't solely because he liked to drink. It was because he was taking lithium, just as Jeremy Brett was taking lithium. It was the one thing to deal with people who have schizophrenia or mental orders, and they are in the public eye. So Jeremy Brett was an international famous actor, obviously, you know, the other a great singer, and so they were given lithium because it was the only drug that allowed them to maintain their career, but the side effect was water retention in the body. So we do have to be careful. Sometimes it is a genuine mental condition. Sometimes it's been brought about because of trauma in that young person's mind. So, good question. Thank you for that.
Yes, indeed. It's one of the one of my researches is the connection between these conditions that they call, you know, disorders and PTSD effects seem to be the same thing. So I believe that people experience traumatic programming or with all these terrible MK type programs, but also you know, kids fall over all the time and they don't get it dealt with properly, and they end up with these little psychological things that people could call demons. That is like, there's, you know, somebody knocks a hole in your head and then something occupies that space.
Yes, I mean, the thing is that you know, I despair sometimes with some arms of the medical profession. For instance, I actually met somebody who genuinely had a real phobia to buttons. And, you know, we shouldn't, I mean, I'm not laughing. And when I tell people, of course, their natural reaction is to laugh. And I think, well, you know, you might have a phobia to spiders. And it really did affect this person's life. So they had to dress with zips. All their clothes had to have zips. If they saw somebody with buttons, they would run away. So they didn't ever go out. And what, working with that person, what had actually transpired was it wasn't the buttons. It was the fact that they were beaten half to death by a grandmother who had a knitted jumper with big buttons down the front of it. So the buttons were just the symbol for what was being done to that child. And they, at that point, they'd completely forgotten that it was this grandmother who was hurting them. And all they remember were these bright red buttons. But once that had worked through, that person now can go out and face a button because they understand it's not the buttons, it is what the emotional energy attachment to it. And I worked that out with that person. I'm not a doctor, but I understood what it was. And so you're absolutely right, JP. Many of these things are from mind programming, could be satanic, could be what we call MKUltra, could be Illuminati, a whole range of them. Incidentally, given to the elite by the reptilians. The mind control pattern was given to people in Babylon and beyond. Now, I've got a population of 12,000, which was a lot 5,000 years ago, and there's only 60 of us. How the hell am I going to control 12,000 people? All right, well, I'm going to exchange you this mind control program for X, Y, or Z. So that's how it all came about on this planet. Fourth dimensional technology.
And this is the whole, all continued through Montauk and all of these programs and things like that, yeah?
Yeah, well, Montauk was really interesting because in the end, they nearly destroyed themselves. And, you know, goodness knows how many tons of concrete they had to pour down into Montauk to seal it all up. But Montauk was interesting, again, always using children, because children up to the age of 12 or 13 are still very, very psychic. It hasn't been knocked out of them by the system. So predominantly using children, and I would urge our listeners to watch the 1957 film Forbidden Planet, which I just shared with a good close friend of mine recently. And in 1957, people don't understand that the Montauk Project was already up and running by that period of time, but they hadn't proved the concept. They knew what they could do with a very powerful radar, but they hadn't proved the concept. And in the film Forbidden Planet, somebody is attached to a device and their own alter ego creates their id, creates a monster which physically takes form in the fourth dimension and comes in and starts smashing the place up. And that is exactly what happened at Montauk. There's a person attached to a machine brought in from their own creation something that started to smash the place up. So fascinating. So watch Ender's Game, watch Forbidden Planet, and you will see the Hollywood trying to alert you to things that were around the corner. We're nearly out of time, aren't we?
Yeah, it's you're getting your cat scan is going off there. Is it your cat or my cat?
Yeah, it's my cat calling me. I'm in here. Come on. If I'm not down in the house, then they wonder where I am and they come and find me.
I got a cat here the other day. She's a cat that I've known for a while, but she's really timid, half wild, tiny, right? And she had so much adrenaline.
Yeah.
When she arrived, she totally trashed my kitchen with this most spectacular running horizontally along the walls 6 feet up in the air.
Good God.
She was like super cat. You know, how the heck did you just do that? But she just ran along all the shelves like down a supermarket knocking all the cans off. I just got a kind of recording, the sound recording of it. It's just so funny. I really understood that she was totally terrified. So I wasn't judging her at all. I was like, oh my God, look at this thing. It's just going everywhere. It's funny. But anyway, so, she's adjusting to, life with P. And, I've known her for a long time. So she remembers me, but, she had to move out of the house she was in. So with that, cat news. Thank you very much, Simon Parks, once again for connecting consciousnesses.
Thank you, and thank you to all the listeners. God bless you all.
Stand by for Simon Says.